NPR.
This is The Indicator from Planet Money. I'm Darren Woods, here with Weilin Wong.
Hi.
And Alexi Horowitz-Ghazi from Planet Money.
Hooray! Hello, Indicators.
So, you know, music has been on our mind this week. Kind of hard to avoid. You know, I've been talking nonstop about Taylor Swift to anyone who will listen.
Seems like that is a common theme on Indicators of the Week.
I've been avoiding them.
But this week, it seems like it's going to be a little different. There will be maybe a break from the Taylor Swift programming.
Whew.
But all of our indicators this week do have one thing in common. They're about the music business. So you will hear the beautiful vocal stylings of our indicators after the break.
This message comes from NPR sponsor HubSpot. More to-dos, less time, and an infinite number of tools to keep track of. Doing business has never felt harder. But you don't need a miracle to hit your goals. You just need HubSpot. Because their all-in-one customer platform can make growing your business infinitely easier. Imagine this: higher quality leads, fast closing deals, wildly happy customers, and more benchmark-breaking quarters. It's not a miracle, it's HubSpot. Visit HubSpot.com to get started today.
This message comes from Apple Card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase. That's 3% on products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Indicators of the Week, I am your opening act. Please clap. And I have a question for you guys. What is your favorite merch that you've ever gotten at a concert?
I'm actually wearing a band t-shirt right now, the Tasmanian band Quivers.
I bought a Mac DeMarco t-shirt once, but I almost immediately lost it.
That's tragic.
Yeah.
I recently went to the Postal Service Death Cab for Cutie 20th anniversary tour.
Humble brag.
I got a rockin' tote bag.
As a public radio person, I love a good tote bag.
And the reason I asked you about merch is because my indicator is 77. That is the number of music venues run by the entertainment company Live Nation that will no longer be taking a cut of merch sales at concerts. This week, Live Nation announced a new program that's supposed to support up-and-coming musicians. And part of this program is that artists will be allowed to keep 100% of the money they get from selling merch. So these 77 participating venues are mostly on the smaller side. They have a capacity of like a couple thousand people.
All right. So we're not talking big arenas or stadiums.
No, and I actually didn't know Live Nation owned so many small club-sized venues, but I think that does show their power in the market, which is, of course, a source of tension in the music industry. And so is this issue of merch cuts. So one musician, Jeff Rosenstock, recently had this viral Instagram post where he shared the percentages that venues are taking on his upcoming tour. And at quite a few places, it was 10 to 20%.
So it's easy to understand why musicians do not like this practice. What's been the reaction to this Live Nation news?
Well, one musician named Clyde Lawrence, he and his sister have a band. They call it Lawrence. Makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
He told Rolling Stone that this was a big victory. He actually had met with Live Nation and pressed them on this issue of merch cuts. What's interesting is that there's this group called the National Independent Venue Association. They put out a statement. They have over 3,000 members. And they said this is a move by Live Nation to steer musicians away from independent venues. You know, because why would an up-and-comer play at a small club that takes a 10% cut of merch sales if they can go to a Live Nation-owned club and get to keep all of their merch sales?
Huh. So the argument is that these small venues won't have it easy either. Maybe they've come to rely on money from merch sales to keep their doors open.
Yeah, I think this debate about merch cuts just further exposes all these tensions in the live entertainment industry. You have this behemoth like Live Nation. You would think that maybe independent artists and independent venues would want to work together, you know, to counter the power of a Live Nation. But instead, it seems like they're being pitted against each other by kind of the economics of the industry.
All right, Darian, I think you are up. What is your indicator of the week?
So my indicator is number one, as in I've been keeping a very close eye on what's number one in the Billboard Hot 100. This week it happens to be Drake and SZA. But what I really want to talk about is whether the charts are even a reflection of a song's popularity. And for me, this questioning started with the surprise summer hit, The Rich Men North of Richmond.
Yes, I remember this.
I saw a lot of headlines about it, a lot of news coverage. It was all over social media, and I remember it's very controversial.
Did you listen to the actual song?
I didn't, no.
I did a couple of times.
Okay, well, let's listen to a part of it.
I've been selling my soul, working all day, overtime.
Is this a song about the modern workplace?
It is.
That is palpable pain in that man's voice.
And then it starts to get these conservative messages.
These rich men north of Richmond, Lord knows they all just want to have total control.
I think I would like this song if I weren't so confused by the lyrics.
So this song is by an artist called Oliver Anthony Music, and it rails against taxes and welfare that you heard. And it kind of came out of the blue. It debuted at number one in August. And how the song got to number one is fueling my skepticism about the charts. So Alexi, Waylon, do either of you ever pay for singles downloads on Apple Music or Amazon?
Not since 2006,
no.
Seven?
No, I was going to say it's been so, so long. Yeah.
What happened with Oliver Anthony Music is that he had nearly 150,000 paid single downloads in that first week. So is it just that a lot of Oliver Anthony fans have old souls and use this outdated medium? Might be so. But according to the New York Times, that's nearly 10 times what the number two single had. And downloads matter a lot for the charts. So for Billboard, an album download is worth 1,250 streams from a subscription service. So that's a lot of playing that song if you want to get it to be at a similar ranking on the charts. And music fan clubs everywhere know this, and they really encourage fans to pay for downloads.
Okay, so what we're getting here is like a reflection of how intensely the fan bases are rallying around these artists and by buying their singles, but it's not necessarily a reflection of how much that music is actually being played out in the world.
This is all part of a wider debate about how Billboard should be writing its charts and whether they need a refresh in the face of, I guess, chart gaming.
Interesting. Well, thank you for that, Darian. Now, Alexi, you're here with the third indicator on our set list.
Yeah, that's right. That's why they call me the closer. And my indicator this week is 1,800. That is the minimum number of songs being targeted in this massive music copyright lawsuit that's currently wending its way through the legal system.
All right, a copyright fight. That's a classic material for us.
Oh, yeah. Like, we covered Ed Sheeran and Blurred Lines. We love this stuff.
Yes, and this case does have some similarities with a few of those blockbuster music copyright cases, but...
For a copyright lawyer, the case is mind-blowing. I have never seen anything like it.
That's friend of the show Jennifer Jenkins, a musical copyright scholar at Duke University. And this case is different, she says, because instead of targeting one particular song, this lawsuit is essentially laying claim to the whole musical genre of reggaeton. What's your relationship with reggaeton?
Oh, just a consumer. I like to shake my booty sometimes.
Don't we all?
Jennifer explains this case boils down to a fight over one particular drum rhythm. The plaintiffs in this case, a Jamaican dancehall duo named Steely and Cleavy, they claim that the origins of this essential beat to reggaeton, the so-called dembo rhythm, goes back to a song they recorded in 1989 called Fish Market. Oh, yeah. I feel like I'm at a fish market when I listen to that. I can smell it.
Even I know that one. Is Fish Market about a workplace?
I think we've returned to the workplace. It's official.
So this is like patient zero for the reggaeton that has spread all around the world.
Yeah, exactly.
The most joyful patient zero I know.
Now, lawyers for Cleavy and the estate of Steely, who passed away over a decade ago, they're seeking financial damages from more than 150 artists who they say have made use of the dembo rhythm. This is a who's who of reggaeton hitmakers and pop royalty. We're talking, you know, Daddy Yankee's Gasolina and Luis Fonsi's Despacito and Bad Bunny's Yo Pereo Sola. Which means the stakes are actually pretty high here. Now, Jennifer says this is still something of a legal long shot, but until a decision does finally come down, the fate of reggaeton and all of our collective booty shaking may just hang in the balance.
I will watch this case with a lot of interest, and in the meantime, I guess I'll have to go to a lot of reggaeton clubs to make do while I can.
Yeah, this story is more about the twerk place.
The twerk place? For all the people in the twerk place, this indicator is for you.
Yes.
This episode was produced by Cooper Katz-McKim with engineering by Josephine Neonai. It was fact-checked by Sierra Juarez. Our editor is Kate Kincannon, and The Indicator is a production of NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Charles Schwab with its original podcast, On Investing. Each week, hosts Lizanne Saunders, Schwab's chief investment strategist, and Kathy Jones, Schwab's chief fixed income strategist, along with their guests, analyze economic developments and bring context to conversations around stocks, fixed income, the economy, and more. Download the latest episode and subscribe at schwab.com/oninvesting or wherever you get your podcasts.